everybody, and welcome to Not About the Weather. This is part two of our 2016 year in review. I'm Brittany, and I'm taking over hosting duties, but Natalie is here along with Ariana and Kristen. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Hi. I love your hosting voice. I don't think I've ever been on an episode of a podcast where you were hosting and I was an underling of you. I'm very excited, actually. I love it.
Yeah, I hosted some rewatchables for Freaks and Geeks, I think. And, I mean, I do Onceable and some book hypes, like when it's an episode that I care about or something.
I'm very familiar with Brittany's hosting voice.
Yeah. Because sometimes, especially for Onceable, I'm usually very frustrated going into it, and then I, like, click on the hosting voice, so it is a totally different voice. This is Not About the Weather. I'm sure if you're listening to this, you listen to part one, so you know what we do and why we're here. But if you want to contact us or find out more about us and listen to past episodes, you can get in touch with us at natwpodcast.com, and that's the hub where you can find all the podcasts to listen to and listen to Teen Wolf podcasts, which also share this handle. And that's where we got our name from, because we wanted to keep NATW. So you can still find us on at NATW Podcast on Twitter. You can go to our Facebook page, Instagram, Gmail, and notaboutheweatherpodcast.com. And there's a Tumblr account. There's all sorts of stuff. If you really, really feel like stalking us, there is a way for you to find us out there. Kraken with, did I miss something?
No, I just love it. I love it so much. I'm gonna make you do this all the time now. Screw this, I'm giving up.
I just like heard you sigh and I was like, oh no, I missed something.
No, I love it. Please continue.
Okay. We're gonna kick off our discussion, the ultimate 2016 obsession to share and grievance to air. And we're not gonna have any argument about which we're gonna start with, because we're gonna start with gripes. And I want to throw it to Ariana, because she's the one who helped make this decision final.
Oh, dear. Okay. Well, mine is going to be intense. Are you ready for that?
I have no idea what this is going to be about. I just say, I didn't listen to part one yet that Karen hosted. I'm going to assume that she spoke about the fact that we're not doing the celebrity death thing. So, as the gripes, just before we get started, that it is, hopefully she mentioned that, but just in case she didn't when I put this together, we're not covering celebrity deaths as gripes because they all sucked and it's kind of more than, it's more than a grievance. It's a tragic part of life that has felt very rough, but we're not going to sit here and talk about grief in that way. This is a little lighter than that, because we don't want to be too depressing, and also because, I don't know, it's not really the right platform for it. But yeah,
we're also not going to dive into the shit show that is politics, but mine is definitely going to be the most political of these gripes.
Interesting.
Because I need to vent my anger out somewhere, and I have since, in these 2 months of, like, depression, decided to vent my anger towards something really stupid, like Sarah J. Maas's books, because that is something tangible that I can be angry at. Has anybody here read the Throne of Glass series?
I've read the first one.
I have not read any of them.
I feel like I've heard of them. I feel like someone on Hyperbole really likes them, or someone like had them as their like most anticipated like book coming up this year in the article that I did, but I can't remember exactly what that was, so I feel like I know they exist. What's going on?
Well, I don't want to like spoil the whole series for Brittany now, so now I'm not sure.
Oh no, go
for
it.
I'll be vague. Okay.
No, dive right in, because I clearly haven't continued or kept up with this at all.
Okay, so there's a lot of problems with She's like a problematic fave for a lot of people, but now I just like have decided to, I mean, she's like a good person, I'm sure, but she's representative of everything that is, like, wrong with this country right now. Wow. And so that's really where my fury comes from. I can't stand it. She's, like, white feminism in, like, the most worst way. It's really frustrating. So basically her books are about this assassin girl who goes and she gets called in by a king to be, like, this assassin. She goes through some tests. She ends up being, like, his main assassin or whatever. It's kind of, like, it's pretty cool. Her best friend is a princess who is, in, like, enslaved, kind of, by the king. And she's also friends slash, like, make-out buddies with the prince. And there's, like, a love triangle with the prince's best friend. It's fun times. But it starts to get problematic in that the author is a well-meaning person who doesn't realize she is problematic, mm-hmm. much in the way that Buffy is often. So, for example, a common trope that has happened not once, but at least two times, is that, well, first of all, almost everyone in the cast is white of the dozens of characters that she has in all of her series, not just this one, but her other series. Everyone is white, except for one person, a woman of color, who gets killed to further the white girl's agency. And then you're like, okay, that's a bummer. I gave her a pass the first time, and then it happened again. So in the next book, she introduces another, the single person of color in the book, who at the end dies to fulfill a white person's agency again. So it's very frustrating. So those are my first frustrating things. But then, like, there's other things that come into it more that more other people have pointed out, and I've just come to learn from. Obviously, those are the things that hurt me more, because that's, like, what I focus on since I'm a woman of color. But, like, a lot of LGBTQ people are really frustrated at her because she has this really forced heteronormativity in her books. Like, it feels forced, like, ridiculously. So she has this concept in her books called the fey bond, where they, like, you, like, meet your soulmate, and when you meet them, it's like in Twilight. You know how they have, like, the wolf thing?
Yeah.
Where they...
like an imprinting. Yeah.
Yes, it's like imprinting, except, like, only... the imprinting only happens between men and women. I mean, yeah, pretty much only between men and women. And, like, everybody in the books, all the girls and all the guys, everyone has to be paired up. Like, they can't be by themselves. That's ridiculous. Everyone has to be paired up. And along with this pairing up, there's this really toxic masculinity that she promotes of the men dominating the women. She also calls them male and female, which is kind of weird. So she'll say things like, he had a really male smile, which is like, what really the fuck does weird. That even mean?
And, that's a noun, not an adjective. Like, yes, if you are male, you. Then that is a noun. Sorry.
Thank you. And she really promotes, like, these, like, really frustrating beauty standards, like, very European and very, like, everyone. So everyone who's good is really unearthly beautiful. They're all, like, very slim and very muscular. The boys are not slim. They are very muscular, like, rippling. And the women are all very slim with long blonde hair. And it's just really frustrating. We can't even talk about this because you guys don't know what I'm talking about, so.
Well, it's just... number one, I just googled a picture of her, and no offense to her, but she's the whitest looking person I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, okay, that brings in the other thing. She definitely, like, writes herself into the story. Like, she is pretty much the main character. Like,
I'm curious, why is this the biggest gripe of the year for you in terms of, like, what do you love them but you hate them? Or, like, why are you hanging out in this world, basically?
They, like, broke my heart. So... basically, I started reading this series, like, in 2014 or 15, because back then, there was a lot less diversity, especially in young adult fantasy. Mm. And so I had heard, they said, oh, you should read this one because it has, it doesn't really say what race she is. She's, like, it says she has brown skin. So she could be black. She could be, like, Middle Eastern. It's not really, it's ambiguous. They're like, but there's a brown girl who's a princess. And I was like, really? She's not, like, a maid? That's really cool. So I read it for that, and I really enjoyed it. And then they killed her off, and I was like, okay, I'm still going to stick with this. And then they killed off the other girl, and I was like, okay, I'm really angry, but I'm still going to stick with this. But then the books, there was a really huge decline in quality, because she is a nice person, the author. That's what's really, I've met her, and she's lovely. It's just her views, what she's producing is problematic. But she also is doing like 3 or 4, like 600 to 800 page books a year, which is too much. And so, like, she's kind of fan fictioning herself now. Like, her two series are very similar, and they kind of, it's very bizarre. And so, the quality has dropped significantly. And this year, I've become more aware, I think, in a lot of things that are problematic. And it's frustrating. Microaggressions have frustrated me more. Probably because of the election and things like that, and the silent majority. So that's why it's my biggest gripe. It's not my biggest gripe of the year. Obviously, real life things are a bigger gripe. But just like this idea, it's also her fans are very, so people point, what's frustrating about her is that people point out things like, you know, it's really problematic how you do these things. And instead of responding and adjusting like some authors have, or being at least acknowledging the problematic nature, she's like, no, she doesn't see it at all. It goes totally over her head, and her fans ardently defend her. So frustrating.
That is very interesting to me, because I'm curious, did any of you see any of the drama that went down with one of the founders, I guess, of young adult literature, S.E. Hinton, who wrote The Outsiders? Did any of you see any of
this
news?
Yes.
Holy shit. Holy shit, people. What is, like, talk about obliviousness. I don't know. Like, I just don't feel like there is any room in the world for this kind of, like, behavior anymore. And this was much more aggressive than obviously this lady, Sarah J. Maas, is being. But for anyone who didn't see this, she was basically she was not even criticized for not being diverse. She was basically has had a long running back and forth about objecting to fans reading her characters from The Outsiders as queer. Like, so she is basically like, no, you can't do that. That's not what it was. I didn't know any gay people when I was 16 and wrote this book, so none of them are meant to be queer, and you can't do that. And basically just going on a very long and ongoing argument with fans on Twitter about...
Yeah, she said she was being attacked for being straight.
yeah, and she basically asks them for the receipts. She's like, no, where is the text backing this in one of her replies?
And basically, you know, she's just been... She's basically claiming that, you know, she can only write from experience, that she can only write what she knows, that, you know, even in other books that, you know, she would not create... You know, she would not write about diverse characters, you know, if she did ever write any other books, because that's not her personal experience. And I think that the clincher here is that write what you know is such fucking bullshit. It's not a real thing. And if it was,
no,
like, it's not a thing. Like, it's that's that is not the point of creating fiction. The point of creating fiction is to give empathy to totally different perspectives. So, in my opinion, so this is just everything about this situation is crazy, and I think that's the tie-in to the mass problem is that if she is not being diverse, it's because she is perhaps innocently, you know, being like, well, that doesn't occur to me, you know, that doesn't actively occur to me to that is wrong, or that doesn't actively occur to me to
she
normalize
has, yeah.
that, you know, like or something like
she
that.
She has said things before in the past. She'll be like, well, I don't want to force it. like, when people have said, like, oh, do you think you'll ever have a gay character? And she's like, well, my characters tell me what they are, and I don't want to force it, even though, like, her straight pairings feel super forced in the last book. And the people, they're, like, legitimately thought that there was a lesbian couple. Like, it's very everything pointed to them. They, like, bonded throughout the whole book and very, like... That's what it was pointing to, and then she, like, just introduced a new character and was like, Faye Bond!
I've always been really... it annoys the crap out of me when authors tell me that their characters dictate where they go. I understand that to a point. Like, I understand that when you're writing a story, that your characters kind of guide themselves. Like, if you're really ingrained in the story you're telling, that, yes, they kind of steer the ship. But you are the author. You are the creator. You can choose to do things. Like, it makes me a little crazy when authors do this, when they just say, my characters have dictated that they can't do this. It's like, no. You're the author. If you want them to do it, they can.
Oh, I'm reading these hidden tweets again, and I just want to die. It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. And she writes supernatural fan fiction, which, like, is fine, but is somewhat of a...
She does? That's really funny.
She's a super... All she does... The reason that this drama starts with her is because all she does is yell at supernatural fandom on Twitter, because she is a supernatural super fan, and because he's, like, you know, semi-famous, has been like, oh, I would like to meet these guys or visit set. So she, like, goes and basically hangs out on the set and kind of just, like, creeps around and, like, lords it over the rest of the supernatural fandom, because...
What a weirdo.
It's very strange. But, okay, but anyway, write what you know, don't do that. The choices, what you said about how it can't be forced, that is the presumption that anything outside of straight and white is forced. That basically,
yeah.
That presumably, that means in her head, anything out of straight and white is not the standard, is not the baseline, is not the norm. And that's the problem everywhere in the industry, that we think, you know, that it's been portrayed that is the normal baseline, and that anything from that is, like, it has to be for a special reason, because that's, you know, not the... I don't know. I have no idea how or why this has happened. In, like, I don't know the history of, like, I mean, of course, the history of freaking racism and worldwide oppression and colonialism, but I don't understand how, like, this is still a thing. Like, I don't understand how this was still a thing 20 years ago or 40 years ago or even 60 years ago, because I just have no... I'm sure that I have ingrained prejudices that I have, you know, had to undo, as most white people do, but I have never had any active understanding of, like, why this happens, like, of why people are like this. And so, yes, like, the default... I think, like, for example, J.K. Rowling, which, you know, one of... We're going to talk about that in a little while with Brittany, new Potter stuff, but I think one of the... You know, the nice things that nicer things that she's done this year with the casting in Cursed Child of Hermione as Black is that, yes, J.K. Rowling 100% in her head imagined Hermione as white when she wrote the books. She drew her own sketches. Hermione was a white girl. But as soon as people, you know, started, she never got on Twitter being like, Hermione's not meant to be black, you know, when fans were into that idea, and as soon as people were being like, she's meant to be white, she pulled her own receipts and was like, I literally never said that she, like, that there was, her skin was never described, there's nothing canonical here, I'm happy to let that interpretation go, I'm really, that's a totally fine reading of the character, and I 100% support it, and obviously support the casting. So, authors being able to, you know, even if authors do have their own defaults that come from their own experience, the idea of easily being able to just, you know, do away with that is nice, I guess. But I don't... The forcing...
Let's get back to J.K. Rowling for a second, because she's a good example. So yeah. She is a problematic fave for me. She's not perfect. Yeah. She does do things that she is not aware of mm-hmm. that are not so great, both in terms of representation. The most obvious one, obviously, is the Native American thing with Ilvermorny mm-hmm. that recently happened, but other things in the past, too. But to give J.K. Rowling credit, I do think that she tries to be aware of what's going on. And like you said, like with the Hermione thing, she did shut it down. And she tried to do that. Another frustrating thing about Sarah J. Maas is that her fans tend to attack people on Twitter a lot, going back to the other mm-hmm. author lady. And so whenever someone criticizes something, even if it's just like, you know, this is problematic because people totally like rail on them. And these are teens, people like adult women rail on teens. And she's totally silent on it. And she knows it's happening because it's happening all over her mentions. And all she ever tweets is, like, fan art.
So she never takes any responsibility or, like...
Yeah.
Never so like, hey, guys, how about we don't do that? Or something like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That sucks and is... Yeah, that's... I feel like that you have some sort of a responsibility to do that. What's really interesting to me there's another young adult author, Maggie Stiefvater, who's had issues with... I personally really love how she handles the sort of fan criticism that she gets. She had issues with her most recent series, which has a lot of diverse characters, but not the leads. So there's five leads and all of them are white.
Because she was on the panel, right? Wasn't she on the Writing Diverse panel?
I'm not sure which one. I think she's been on one before. But she and like two of them are queer and et cetera. But the four leads, the leads are white. There's many characters in it and one character who becomes a lead who's not white. But there are very, very strong reasons why that her leads aren't white in that particular series. One of them being the extra issues that a race divide would cause in the South, which the books could have been about that, but were not about that. They were about something totally different. Regardless of that, there's a particular character that people are determined to basically race bend because he is thuggish, aggressive, violent, you know, drinks a lot, and he's basically the one that, you know, gets into trouble and has to be held back by the rich white boy. He's also meant to be white. He's meant to be Irish background. He is the one character that people like to race bend as black. So I'm sort of sitting there going, that is an interesting interpretation of that text that you've done there. I understand wanting diversity, but that interpretation of, like, you're reading that character and assigning blackness to that character based on that profile is possibly more problematic than him being white. And she has said similar things and has said, I 100% do not care if you race bend the characters. And she reblogs race bend fan art and all of that kind of stuff. But if you're doing it, do it with the whole cast. When people only race bend that one character as black, it kind of makes me feel very uncomfortable at the interpretation, you know, of assigning those traits to that character and that character only. And there have been great race bends of entire cast of characters, but I liked that sort of she spoke out on her end about basically these kind of, I guess, teens or I don't know, Tumblr fandom people thinking that they were perhaps being white teens. This is, by the way, most of the time, the fans in question, thinking that they are sort of thinking that what they're doing is not problematic when it is actually tinged with something slightly nastier than they maybe realise. So her handling of that, I quite liked, and she is someone who has said, you know, I acknowledge that those books were very, very white, and I will do better in the future. Like, she actually, you know, she addresses the actual concerns, strives to do better, has actually pitched various other stories, you know, coming up about other races and things like that, but the handling of the race bending for those reasons was one that always really stuck out to me. But anyway.
And that is the whole point, right? Nobody can be perfect because we all have our biases that are ingrained in us. And unfortunately, we haven't had the opportunity so yet in literature to be able to empathize with everybody yet, I feel like. Mm. So nobody can be perfect, but I think the goal should be to try and do better and to acknowledge when you're being called out so that you can do better in the future.
Yes, agreed. So, Brittany.
So that's the end of my rant. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Which is not really about one author. It's more like publishing and the world and America in general.
And I think that's a great, like, point, though, for a lot of things that went on last year and were brought, at least to my attention, more so in mainstream media, which was kind of refreshing because, you know, you have these conversations with friends or with people across, like, Hypeable even, but then to see things being brought up a lot more in, you know, popular culture on the news or, you know, just things like that is frustrating because you have to read about it and realize where it is, but also educational and, you know, you can see where things should be going. Oh, that was I really enjoyed that conversation. I'm sorry I didn't have anything to add because I don't have any examples that I could think of.
I'm glad but you liked listening to it.
I did. I really did. I do have a lot of commentary about Darren Criss not producing any music this year. So I'm going to let Kristen complain first, though.
I mean, okay. I have been, like, racking my brain all day trying to come up with a gripe. My hype came very easily. But honestly, like, there were some terrible things that happened in 2016, but a lot of it, for me, wasn't pop culture related. So, you know. But my one gripe is that Darren Criss still has not produced a solo album, and it's about damn time. We have been... Okay, I went to the Listen Up tour. I was there.
How long ago was that?
I mean...
So
what,
long ago.
4 years ago?
So
5 years ago?
Yeah, it was so long ago.
He had new material. He had new songs, and he was working on his album. And I understand that, especially with him, like, he's very into, like, letting it come to him and, like, letting the music kind of create itself, and he writes these things because it's what comes to him, and I get it. But 5 years? Like, yeah. He promised us an album at the end of Glee. Like, he kept talking about it in interviews, and people are expecting it and waiting for it. Theo Katzman has put out an album before Darren's,
yeah.
And I love
Theo. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. He put out his EP, and he just put out another new album, and I love him. But come on, Darren. Like, let's go.
I have a few theories about this because in case anyone listening to this show is not aware, have tracked this man's career very closely as I was a large fan.
Yes, because I tracked you on Glee Chat, and so I know that you're, like, acquaintances with him.
Oh, I don't mean that, but yeah, I have a passing acquaintance with him from being a fucking stalker. Not a literal stalker. No. Seriously. Okay. Side note, he is number one person in the world that I have bumped into on the street the most times. It's like, weird. Like, I have a cousin in Sydney who I've maybe come second. Like, I've bumped into him on the street maybe 3 or 4 times in my life without organising to see him. I live in a big city. I don't bump into people on the street. I have bumped into Darren Criss on the street. Like, and it's always been, like, surrounding events that we were both at, you know, for a reason, if you know what I mean. But I have bumped into him randomly at events or on the street.
At Comic-Con. You don't bump into people at Comic-Con.
Oh, my God. I don't want to detract from Kristen's point, but holy shit, that was weird. Because I was literally going back to my hotel before the Stars party, I think it was. I did not know he was at Comic-Con at all. I later found out that he was there because he was doing... Like, he does a voice on Transformers, and he was there for that. I did not know he was attending San Diego Comic-Con. I just saw someone walking in front of my hotel as I was crossing the road to go to it, and I was like, I know that fucking walk. I know that is Darren. And I walked up to him, and, like, from, like 20 feet away, I'm like, are you fucking serious? Like, with my hands, I was like, are you fucking serious? And he was just like, what is going on? Like, because both of us we've had this happen 4 or 5 times in different countries. It's weird. It's weird. And it is always, like, there's a reason. Like, I was you know, I bumped into him on the streets of London after the Deathly Hallows premiere because I was, like, there as a fan, or we were in a hotel nearby as a fan watching live stream, and he was at the event. But we were not at the red carpet, and this was not at the red carpet. It was, like, up the street. He was, like, walking somewhere, and I was just like, okay. Anyway, moving on. Regardless of that, that's just a weird thing that happens that the universe makes me bump into Darren Criss on the street, is that I have followed this man's career very, very closely as a fan. He had a record deal before Glee on an indie label that he was meant to make a record with. And when he got Glee, he had to drop that because he had to be signed to, I don't know, is it Columbia that had them? Like, whoever was, like, the music partner with Fox for Glee, literally his voice could not be released on recordings without express permission from that major label. I don't think he particularly likes major labels, and I'm wondering if he still has any, like, if there's a period, if the Glee contract included...
Oh, if he's waiting it out?
If the Glee contract included, we are the only ones that can release your record in the period, you know, in, say, 2 years after it or something like that, and I'm wondering if he's waiting that out. Because I don't think that he really particularly likes major labels. It could also be that he was working on it with that major label and it didn't work out. Perhaps they don't know how to market him. Perhaps no one wants to make his record, which seems like not very smart, because I feel like there's a lot of resources that, you know, he could have to make a record. But he's also anal as fuck. Like, if you know anything about him, like, aside from the kind of, like, hi, I wear pink sunglasses, he's, like, a nitpicky, perfectionist, bitchy, anal guy. And I love him, but he's very particular. And so I would not be surprised if there's a lot of music that he's written that he threw out. If you know what I mean, that he doesn't feel like he has what he needs for an album. This is, again, all conjecture. It's not like I have inside knowledge or anything like that. But my theories on actually releasing an album, because he does so much else, and Elsie Fest, I think that's, like, such a cool idea for an event, which, if you don't know, is, like, a Broadway music festival that he produces and has done for 2 years, where he literally a live outdoor event where you come and sing along like a music festival, but it's all Broadway performers, which I love the idea of. And I think him and his manager are producing behind the scenes on a show about musicians, yes, like a session writer, and I wondered if he might be writing music for that, and so locked into some other kind of writing contract. And he's been doing, you know, Hedwig, and he's been doing, you know, whatever the hell else he does, hosting weird things, voiceover stuff. The songwriting, I don't know. My theories are that he's waiting out a contract with a label he doesn't want to produce with, or that he's throwing out material because he's an anal dick, basically. Those are my theories.
Well, in support of your label issue, I kind of did a little digging while you were talking, and yes, the Glee stuff was all released through Columbia, and it looks like, and I also looked to see who Lea Michele did hers with.
It's Columbia.
She released hers through Columbia.
Yeah.
So possibly, yeah, maybe they have, like, a certain number of years in which Columbia owns all the rights to his voice and to produce albums with his voice, besides the Broadway soundtracks that he may or may not have been a part of. I don't know if he had any.
No, none of the Broadway show. He has not been the originator of any of his Broadway roles, so he has no official Broadway soundtracks either.
Okay, so that may very well be the problem, and if that's the problem, then I completely understand. But yeah, also, he is working on a show for Fox. It's called Royalties.
Yeah.
He is working, like, he's working behind the scenes. He's not going to be a part of the show, for people who are interested.
Like, as an actor. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's not going to be a part of the cast, but it's basically a story about, like, songwriters and the people behind pop stars, the people who produce these hits and make them stars. And so when I read that he was producing a show, I thought maybe that's why. Like, he has a lot of different, you know, irons in the fire. Like, he's got a lot of things that he's doing all the time, and it's like, take 30 seconds and, you know, figure out this album thing, because we're all still waiting, and I hope he knows that.
Mm. It's interesting. I don't know, man. He does have a lot. He does a lot of random things. Like he's made a pretty big and pretty reliable name for himself. Just in terms of people always want him to, you know, host things. He's a very wanted guest at things and all of that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I would hope that his straight up original music might be something that he wants to return to, but he hasn't even really played live in a while, I don't think.
I have a question.
Yes.
That is slightly off topic, so we can come back to it.
No, please.
but, okay, has anybody here ever met Leah Michelle?
No.
I've met her mom.
No one
met her mom.
Mom is the nicest woman on the face of the earth, and I didn't know it was her mom.
Where was that?
I won like a radio contest a few years ago and went to like Good Morning America. Like they paid for a hotel in New York and stuff like that.
Wow.
And went to like her performing on Good Morning America. And I was standing in the back with my friend who was like, yeah, I'll stay in New York overnight so I don't have to commute to my job in the morning. And so she came with me to Good Morning America performance. And there was this woman who was like really short and she was like kind of like trying to see the stage and stuff. And I was like, you can like stand in front of me. Cause I didn't say I didn't care, but I was like, it doesn't bother me. Like you can like get closer. And she goes, oh no, I've been listening to her sing since before she could talk. And I was like, oh, do you know her? And she's like, I'm her mom.
That's cute.
And she was just so nice. She like talked to us the whole time, except when Leah was singing, but yeah, I've never actually met Leah Michelle, just her mom.
I have seen her in person behind the scenes twice, if that makes sense. Like, I've seen her, like, in terms of her at Comic-Con 2015, like, her and the rest of the cast of Scream Queens, they actually had, like, some party. My apartment was right next to the Palomar, you know, where we went for the Scholastic party. They had a party in there for Scream Queens as well, and so it was, like, her, basically, and, like, the girls from Scream Queens, and I don't know if Jamie Lee Curtis was there, but, like, so it was, like, them in, like, evening gowns and her just basically bossily yelling about the van, like, are we all meant to get in this? Is it just us? Or are the
parties
coming? And, blah, blah, blah. And kind of just, like trying to orchestrate, but, like, bossily and quite prissily. So that was kind of, I was like, this is exactly what I expect you to be, Leah Michelle. I didn't say anything to her, but I was like, okay, this is happening. So yeah. Why do you ask? Okay.
Oh, because I have a story that I've been meaning to tell you guys. So, well, first of all, I should preface by saying that I love Leah Michelle. I think she's fabulous. I don't know her personally at all, but, I recently made a friend who is friends with Melissa Benoist, who did community theater with her. And first of all, she says that Melissa is Supergirl. Like, that's her real personality, that she's just as cute and sweet. But that apparently, like, that season, or the last few seasons, like, the whole cast hated Leah Michelle, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
Because Naya Rivera has said the same thing. Oh. Basically, she, like, tried to get everyone fired because she's Rachel Berry. And
she's, like, Ryan Murphy's pet.
She's,
like, and I think that...
I think
Sarah Paulson is taking that role now.
Like, I think that really surprises me about Sarah Paulson, because I thought that she was, like, a lot more sensible than that, but...
Oh, she is. She is. Until you're in Ryan Murphy's orbit. When you're in Ryan Murphy's orbit, I feel like people become different people. Like, they think that, like, Sarah Paulson has had a wonderful career. Kathy Bates has had, like, one of the best careers ever. And whenever she's with Ryan Murphy, she's like, I credit my career to him. I'm like, no, you don't. Do you know, like, have you looked at any of your films before you met Ryan Murphy? You are a self-made woman. Ryan Murphy did not save your career.
Yeah. Oh, he's a mess. An unnamed showrunner of my acquaintance, which is not that subtle because I don't have that many showrunners in my acquaintance.
What? She has one.
At Comic-Con, we were talking about People vs. O.J. Simpson. He was like, it's actually really good. And I was like, but Ryan Murphy, he's like, I know, I fucking hate him. But it's so good. So, like, yeah, so he's just... And he had such a rep on the Paramount lot. I've been to the Paramount lot a couple of times, and, like, the random staff members there who are, like, meant to look after the guests or the tourists who come to the Paramount lot outright bitch him out while he was still there filming on the lot. Like, and like, no, we all hate him, like, when he comes by. And I'm just like, oh, this is... What a man. But yeah, I'm glad that Darren's not working directly with him, but I do think that he is one of, like, Ryan's, like, I think he has ridden that a bit, whereas some of the others are like, I'm getting away from that man and never want to.
Yeah, well, no, he was just on Hotel.
It wasn't, it was 2 years ago, wasn't it? Like, I hope
it was last year.
Oh, whatever. I hope that he's a little outside the orbit, but he's definitely, like, one that's, you know, at least on the surface, carried on supporting Ryan and also sort of sucking up with Leah. Like, they, you know, performed together and they kind of, I don't know how much still, but there was definitely some. Whereas the rest of the cast are all seem like super tight away from that. Like, a bunch of them were in London seeing Amber Riley in Dreamgirls, which I tried to get tickets to every day that I was in London and couldn't get tickets to because it was sold out forever. But they are all tight. And I don't know, Leah, she seems very difficult, and sometimes I feel sorry for her, but she seems incredibly difficult. But like, it's sort of a weird innocent
I think she's a little bit oblivious. Little bit oblivious of how she comes off. Like, I keep thinking of this one video she made with Jonathan Groff
The Ham for Ham. Yeah.
Yes, the Ham for Ham, where she was like, where she was like, cast me in as Angelica next. And to Lynn, and I'm just like, you're never going to be Angelica. You're white. Like, at least not in the foreseeable future.
Oh, my God.
At least not by Lynn.
Oh, my God. She's very difficult, but I feel like it's a weird, innocent difficultness, and I don't know. It's hilarious, but anyway, Darren, I don't know. I don't know. I can't even imagine, like, what kind of new music he might make now. Like, if it's going to be, you know, the same kind of pop rock stuff he was originally making, or if he wants to do something else, if he can kind of still cares about that kind of thing or what. But yeah, I, Kristen, I didn't know that you were, like, hanging out so desperately for the Darren Criss album.
I mean, it's if I was asked, like, whose album would I like to have?
Yeah.
It's Darren. Like, there's a lot, I mean...
It's true.
You get a lot of music every year, but we still have nothing from him. Like, it's kind of making me a little crazy. Like, he's a very talented man. He just needs to share it with the world.
It's true. But I feel like it had been so long since the concept of a Darren Criss album was possible that I'd, like, forgotten that it was a thing that was meant to happen.
I was digging the bottom of the well for grapes.
I mean, it's fair. It's just maybe 2017 will be the year. Oh my God, 2017. Oh, I still feel like it's about 6 months ago that he was cast on Glee, and that, like, everyone was being like, "Oh my God, Warbler Fever." Like, it does not feel like it was like 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, I haven't been able to listen to the Katy Perry version of Teenage Dreams since the Warblers have done it. It comes on the radio, and I'm like, no, it's just not as good. And I turn it off.
Yep, same here.
Yeah, I wish... That's a great gripe, though, because it's something that I don't think about, but I have been thinking about recently, because, like you said, Theo's album came out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, what happened to that other half of the equation there, because I've seen Theo Katzmann so many times. I've seen every single New York show that he's done.
He put out
Rain. And I've, like, seen him in Ann Arbor twice. Like, I saw him when he was with Darren, and then I went back up for his solo show in Ann Arbor, like, the next year or something. And I love them. It's just,
I went to Theo's, like, first album release party in New York at some, like,
2012, right? Like, that's because Romance Without Finance, I played that album all through my New York trip in 2012, and I remember, so it's like very much like my memory of that trip. And yeah, I guess he's now had two albums and Darren has had zero, so I don't know.
We'll get there eventually. I would like even just like some Disney covers just recorded in high quality that aren't ripped from like a live stream that I have on my computer.
Funny because there are so many people like, you know, independently producing music and stuff like that. Like, okay, there's this guy in the Supernatural fandom called Jason Manns. He's not in the fandom. He's a friend of Jensen Ackles. He's a musician. And Jensen kind of brought him into the fold of the Supernatural world, and like it ended up that him and like another guy in Supernatural like made a band together. And anyway, point is, they have like several albums that are literally like called like Covers with Friends, Christmas with Friends, and they're just like cover albums that they put on the internet, and they're like on Spotify, so someone's getting paid, and it's like all of their friends, you know, various people sing on them from the show, like, and just their band and their whole musical slash actory circle, and they're making, you know, a small amount of money off the Supernatural fandom. I don't know if Darren is sort of aiming for something bigger than this. He has quite a high profile life, but it's not that hard to record music and put it out there. So like this these days. So I assume there's a reason that he's not doing it, even if it was like a covers album or something like that. I assume that he either can't or he's being really, perfectionist-y about it, and not just being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to crowdfund my album or something like that. I don't know. Let's crowdfund Darren Criss's album. No, he doesn't need our money. But he really doesn't. But
yeah, I think he'll be fine.
You went to Elsie Fest the first year, Brittany, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it? Like, I love the concept of it, but I was not there. I love the idea of it. Was it, like, good? Like, did it do the that kind of music justice? Like, was the crowd good?
Yeah, the crowd was good. The crowd was very much... It kind of sucked for some of the lesser-known Broadway people who I knew just from seeing them in various shows. But, like, you know, everyone was there for Darren, pretty much, and it, like, whenever he would come out and sing with someone, like, it was like he was doing them a favor. Oh, you know, man. it felt like that the first year because of the crowd. I think more Broadway people have gone since, like, more Broadway fans have gone since.
Well, because this year had, like, Leslie Odom Jr., and he was probably a bigger draw than Darren, but I thought Aaron Tveit was there the first year.
And Leslie, both of them were there the first year.
I don't know.
Leslie ran straight from the theater. He got off stage and came straight to perform.
That man.
From Hamilton.
That's so weird. I
love that. What is Elsie Fest?
Gone.
Oh, go ahead. No, you are very invested. You go.
It's a music festival that Darren basically conceptualized and got made. Like, he got people to put money behind it. It is a live music festival where the set, instead of, like, so-and-so band, you know, like Bastille, the XX, I don't know bands, those are the only, it's Broadway performance. So it's a live outdoor music festival where the music is Broadway sets, basically, like the sets of, you know, people's Broadway or live performance solo music for that industry. And so it's so Darren, like, because Darren is like Queen of Coachella, like, kind of like, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, he loves the idea of like gathering people and like that communal live performance experience, you know, outside of a theater context. He's the guy, you know, he gets off on being the guy at parties drawing people in to like sing together and stuff like that. Something he's talked about before. And so he, you know, you have that concept, and then you have the fact that Broadway is getting like more of like fan involvement, like fandom people reacting in that way that they want to see live performances, and that they care about Broadway artists sort of as quote unquote pop stars. So it's a music festival that has Broadway guests, basically. So and this year had really big ones. Like this year, I think was Cynthia Erivo there this year, and they had he gets like a good day's lineup of Broadway musicians who do like outdoor live sets like a music festival, and it is like my dream music festival. So I'm really bummed that I have not got to go, and I don't know if he'll be able to keep doing it every year. But he's done it for 2 years, and I think it's like a perfect venture for him. But it is getting in the way of the album, I presume. It's just yet another of the things that he's juggling. Anyway, good old Darren. He's always a staple of life, isn't he?
Yeah, he hasn't seemed to have gone away yet. So, you know, keep him in the loop.
Yeah.
So we have Natalie, our gripes are kind of like, they kind of go together because they're not about death, but they are about cancellations of shows that just could not be revived in 2016.
Yours is not a complaint about the topic. It's to do with the cancellation. I wasn't sure what you were saying here.
Yeah, it was canceled. See, clearly no one paid attention to it. And so it got canceled.
Do you want to go first? Yeah, I'll go first.
Because my gripe, actually, I have a huge gripe about your gripe, and it has nothing to do with the show. It has to do with the fans, which is horrible, but...
Okay, so my gripe is the cancellation of Agent Carter. So in terms of the pop culture world, and, you know, since we're not talking about deaths and pop politics, because a couple of the deaths were just devastating for me personally, but the biggest grief that I had this year in terms of something that wasn't real world consequences is the cancellation of Agent Carter. I cried over that like someone had actually died. Like, it just hurt so bad because I love everything about it. Like, I obviously love the Marvel Universe, particularly the Captain America story, which this came from. I love period dramas. Hayley Atwell is just a fantastic, ridiculous, supportive, amazing woman who, you know, really believed in her project, and just everything about that universe that was being created was like is a dream show for me. And, you know, it got 2 seasons of life, and then it got cancelled. They chose not to renew on ABC. It ended on a cliffhanger where the character, besides from Peggy, that I was most interested in, was like, is he dead? Is he not dead? It's a big shocker ending. And it just, I'm just crushed, basically, that they would not. I feel like that even, I don't understand if it was just a ratings thing or what, you know, but I feel like there's like a moral obligation that this show should exist, at least for me personally. And I'm so sorry to lose it for so many ways. It definitely, I would go above saying like, oh, it's my favorite show, like, or anything like that. Like, I would go beyond that. Like, it doesn't just, because it didn't just feel like a show. It kind of felt like a statement of like, no, we don't want this, or we don't believe in this from whoever was making those decisions, and what that particular character, like, of Peggy stood for as kind of a female. A lot of the stereotypes that she broke about female, and I'm not talking about, like, oh, she can fight and stuff like that. I'm talking about sort of things about her personality. I don't know. I just found it very crushing because the Marvel Universe is one that I'm so heavily invested in, so it was really upsetting for me to lose this, because it was, you know, it was the number one most favourite Marvel property in this universe that I'm very invested in. But, yeah, I assume that most people who enjoy Marvel were sad about Agent Carter, and I think it's better than any of the other shows that they have. I hate Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I fucking hate it. I quit watching it because I was... I don't like being one of those people like, oh, I'm invested in this fandom, so I have to watch it, but I'm going to watch it and complain about it. No, I just dropped it because I can't fucking stand any of the characters. I hate all of them. And I don't really like any of the Netflix shows. I haven't been able to get into them. They're a bit too much. I love period dramas. I love Peggy. I think she's one of the best characters in the Marvel universe, and I am just crushed that it is gone, and that this is what they deemed worth getting rid of compared to the other shows that they are making and choosing to put money into, and the fact that Netflix is picking up the new Marvel properties but didn't see value in doing this one. So
yeah, I was gonna talk about this. If you hadn't already had it in the doc, this was my gripe. So I'm totally with you on it. My biggest complaint is that Netflix had no interest in picking it up. Like, they kind of dangled their toes in the water on it. They said maybe, and then, like, yanked back. This property had a built-in fan base, people who absolutely loved it. I think it would have benefited from the binge watch version, like being able to sit down and watch 12 episodes of Agent Carter in a row back to back. I think that would have been a really great way for this show to have new life. I think with all of the Netflix, all of the Marvel Netflix shows, I think it would have fit in beautifully with that whole idea. Maybe she's not a defender, but like the fact that they have four Marvel properties now, or five with Punisher, and they couldn't find room for Peggy Carter on their docket just really pissed me off. The show was so good.
I have to disagree with you on there. I can understand your frustration, but I don't think that Agent... I'm not saying she couldn't be on Netflix, but I don't think that she fits in with what they're doing. Like, I think that they are trying to keep it to Defenders, and that is... She doesn't fit in with the Defenders. They're all so, like, fucked up as individuals.
No, I know that.
Optimism doesn't fit in that world.
Yeah. And, like, I know she's not a Defender, but, like, the idea that they have so much Marvel on their plate and they had no interest in taking her on.
They already had their Marvel things that they knew what they wanted to invest in. This is for their brand. She wasn't fitting their brand at that moment.
Yeah, so it was like, because I followed this mainly because I was interested. I was like, okay, this is a good case study because I'm interested in like the politics of the business behind certain decisions. And so I'm like, this is a great, like, you know, thing to follow to see if Netflix would pick this up or it could find new life somewhere else, like on, like, you know, other shows, when other shows get canceled, like, can they live on Hulu? Can they live here? Can they live there? And with Netflix, their reasoning was basically like, we're building an original brand, like Ariana was saying with the Defenders. That's their original brand. So they weren't interested in picking something up and making like two Marvel brands. They were like, oh, no, we'll just get the streaming rights. And then that's its own thing. But the true, like the original brand is the Defenders and that darker, edgier content. So it sucks because Agent Carter was great. I've watched a couple of episodes offhandedly with my dad, who was a huge fan, by the way. Tuesday nights, he watched it. He couldn't remember the name of it for the whole first season. So it was like, you know, the thing with the it's in the past with the girl, that thing. I like that one. So that's how he watched that. And Gotham, the only two shows the man watches. And okay. he was very upset that didn't come back because he also said the same thing. It ended on a cliffhanger. How am I going to know? I'm like, I don't know. Just,
you know, it's just really interesting to me that this isn't a show that the audience... I don't know if it was just ratings or not, but that they think that this isn't a show, if it was, that this isn't a show that audiences would want to watch. Because it's just... I'm trying to think if this was airing... If this was a British product, like if this was a BBC show, this would be the top-rated show on BBC. Not even just because it's Peggy Carter, but because... Do you know, like, the number one, like, rated, like, drama on BBC currently is Call the Midwife. Call the Midwife is a show about nuns and young women riding bicycles around the West End of London and, like, dealing with the personal problems of the era. Like, and that is, like, 10 to 12 million viewers, like, on the regs. Their Christmas special had about 20 million viewers. And so I don't understand, like, why period dramas about cool women are not appreciated in the USA. Can anyone tell me this?
Yeah, because it doesn't fit with ABC's branding model either.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is really more of a... It's like the same thing Supergirl. Like, it fits much better on the CW.
Yeah, it didn't fit.
And I agree. I think Agent Carter would probably fit better on the CW. Also, Agent Carter... I really enjoyed this show as well. But there are, I do think that there's reason. It was a very specific brand of feminism. It was very like 90s feminism. I hate to say this because I don't care for Buffy, but it is kind of more of the Buffy kind of feminism, which I think for a lot of people, they've kind of moved past that and they don't, like, it's just not as engaging when there's so many things on TV.
Yeah, the demographics that broadcast, like, or not even broadcast, basic cables, like, reaching is not the Peggy Carter audience. There, like, it shouldn't have started on ABC. It had to have started somewhere else, so it wasn't going to be revived anywhere else. But it's a property thing. I feel like it probably even would have worked better on, like, ABC Family or Freeform, yeah, which
I
is...
Yeah, I can see that.
Especially with the way that Freeform is rebranding itself, I think it would have worked out a lot better if it had started there. And then ABC tried and failed with another show immediately following with... what's the actress's name? I don't even know her name.
Hayley Atwell?
Yeah, Hayley Atwell. Like, that show,
the new one,
god awful.
Yeah,
it was so bad. Oh, I watched 3 episodes.
Her American accent, I can't. It's so bad.
Oh, and the cases, like, everything was just so bad about it.
It's interesting because I am somewhat of an outsider here in that I don't. And I was talking to Brooke about this the other day. I don't have that much awareness as an Australian of, like, what the network reputations are, like what an ABC show is versus a CW. Like, I know now a bit, if you know what I mean, but only a bit. And it seems to be so, so kind of important to, you know, for a show to succeed that it is on the right network, or, you know, that they have different attitudes, they have different priorities, they even have different standards and practices. That's something that you guys are all kind of aware of. Oh, yeah, that's a CW show, like, and what that means. It's not just that it's on that network. It means something more than happens to air. I don't know that much about that because that's not how I get the television, if you know what I mean. It all just comes through the computer and it's not really, like, to do with the network. You know, don't really notice the network trends until you start really looking into it, you know, from this perspective of journalism. So it's not something I grew up with or have a lot of awareness about. So for me, I'm just like, I like period dramas. Period dramas are successful. Why isn't this period drama successful, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, if you, like, watch, like, so, like, CBS, for example, is where the ratings live because that's where the major audiences are turning in week after week because that's your procedural channel. That's your NCIS's and your not SVU, that's NBC. But, like, all of that stuff, like, the stuff that you wouldn't think was going to succeed, like, MacGyver's on that channel, and it's doing so well because it fits with, it just fits with that what those people like to watch.
Because they just turn it on and, like, just let it go.
Yeah, the Big Bang Theory's on there, and it's doing fantastic. Like, The Odd Couple is in, like, its third season, and that show is horrendous.
Yeah.
But it gets viewers because everybody watches, like, the prime demographic watches CBS, and they don't turn it off because... When 60 Minutes is on, they're probably asleep, and then they just leave their TV on. So, you know, it's like, but, like, and then you go to ABC for, like, the Oh My God dramas. So you have your...
Like Shondaland.
Your Shondaland. Once Upon a Times, and it's, like, you know, act break after act break of twists, and then you, like, you have to be watching it in the moment or it doesn't matter. And then you have your, like, NBC, which is slowly coming together as a network again. It failed for a very long time, but it's building itself back up. And then Fox is sort of, like, hit or miss lately. It has a lot of cooking shows.
They try so hard to be edgy.
Well, yeah, Fox, like, their shows all have, like, a shtick. Like, Fox is, like, the network of shows that don't fit anywhere else. Like, Glee never really, it wouldn't have fit on ABC or NBC.
Glee was
or CBS.
Glee was also, like, edgy.
And it was fine.
It's like,
but, like, Gotham.
They're trying so hard. That's how I think of Fox. Like, they're trying.
All of their shows
so hard. Like, Gotham is a totally weird show. So is Bones. Bones doesn't really fit the procedural because there's something else about it that
It's
weird. They just don't fit anywhere else. And Fox is like this home for misfit toys. Like, it just collects them.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm sort of getting at the moment, like, that I'm learning is that the CW is weirdly loyal. That it renews things into the ground. And I'm not just talking about Supernatural, obviously, though that one is a bit of a ridiculously long circumstance.
Well, but that's a newer thing. Like, they didn't always used to be like that. It's just that right now, they have been picking good stuff. Like, yeah, the stuff they're picking has been working, and people are watching it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's
no one is watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but they're still renewing it because
it's getting awards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, just that they've been renewing stuff that, regardless of ratings, either because it's critically acclaimed or because that they believe in, you know, the material that they've invested in already and that they want to keep pushing it.
That's the FX model, which, like, they are so successful as a network because they, like, John Landgraf just talked about this at his TCA presentation. He's the president of programming at FX. He is dubbed the mayor of TV. So he was saying at the panel, he was like, well, we do three things. It's the viewers, it's the critics, and then it's, the viewers, the critics, and I don't know, something else random. But if it passes two out of three, it gets renewed. So, like, The Americans is one of the most critically acclaimed television shows on TV. It's my favorite television show, hands down, that's airing, that I turn off my phone and close my computer to watch. And those ratings are lower than Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. They are, like, barely cracking a 1. Like, 1.1 was the highest it got last year.
Wow.
And that is abysmal, but it's the best show on TV. Fargo, too, has ratings in the, like, dumpster. It's like a dumpster fire over there with ratings.
Yeah.
But they have the best television. It's
because
so
they
good.
Believe
That's why.
In it. Just because they believe
they
in what they're
the
doing, and they don't let that dictate
it. Just let the creators do it.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. So good.
Why,
like,
can't
always
we all
sunny.
Just be like that? Why? Why can't all things just be like that?
Because the other, they need to make money.
Screw money.
Yeah. Otherwise, it can't get on if you can't pay for it.
Well, then how do these guys make money?
Because FX is premium cable.
Oh, so it's the subscriber fees that pay for it.
It's not, you know, you don't have to be a subscriber, but it's not, like, you don't just get it. Like, you get a CBS or an NBC with, like, basic cable. It's, you have to, like, have more than 40 channels to get it.
So is this, you said that you had something that tied into Agent Carter. Was this about the fans being very annoying?
Oh my God,
or was
the
this
hashtag,
something?
If I saw a hashtag save Agent Carter one more time, I was going to, like, die.
Look,
or jump off a bridge.
I know.
I'm like, it's not going to work. A hashtag campaign is not going to work. And it was driving me insane.
Yes.
I'm all for being upset that your show is being canceled and having optimism that it could be picked up somewhere else. Like I said, I was equally enthralled to see if it was going to get picked up somewhere else. But I couldn't take it. I muted it on Twitter. Like, it's still one of my muted hashtags. I couldn't deal with it. It was driving me absolutely up a wall. Because even after, like, the Netflix announcement was like, no, we're not taking this. Like, it is dead in the water. Like, it is gone. It's not happening. I still saw it, and I was like, I can't deal with this.
Yes,
I just can't.
People are still quite keen.
And I get it. I'm still upset.
I can see now, though, how, like, a movie, I feel like a movie would be profitable for them if they decided to do a movie.
Yeah. And they're, Haley Atwell's into it. She said that, right? I think I read that somewhere.
Yeah. I think that she'll always, like, I think that the core cast, or at least her and James Darcy, and probably Dominic Cooper, would always, like, at any era, be like, yeah, we could come back and do, like, wherever they are in that story right now, because of the Howard Stark and Peggy Carter characters stay very relevant throughout the entire Marvel era. So it would work at any time. But we'll see. I've just looked on Fox. Sorry, I was just looking at FX, and I've clicked onto the Wikipedia page of Ryan Murphy's feud, which I just, oh dear.
That's the only downfall of FX. They'll give Ryan Murphy whatever he wants.
Yeah, that seems true. wow,
like three more seasons of American Horror Story.
This cast for Feud is unbelievable. What is he doing to these people?
It's going to be great, even though I still currently do not like Susan Sarandon.
Yeah. Stanley Tucci. Anyway, sorry, but what about the Muppets?
We don't have to talk. I mean, it's been an hour and a half. We can mosey right along to hike.
No, tell me about the Muppets, because the Muppets, the movie.
Maybe we should do two parts. Like, we can make the part two,
oh my God.
part one. And we can do one for the gripes and one for the hype.
Jesus. Very quickly, tell us about the Muppets, though, Brittany, because I just want to know. Because the Muppets is the... When you use that GIF, the Muppets movie, the one from however many years ago, the first reboot Muppets movie, was the first movie I watched in 2017. It happened to be airing on the television, and I watched it again and enjoyed it. So...
Oh, well, that's nice.
I did not know whether you meant you were hating on the Muppets or hating that it got cancelled.
No, I'm hating that it got cancelled. So I grew up with the Muppets, include like reruns, and we had them on VHS, and the Muppet movie, the original Muppet movie, was one of our most watched and well-worn VHSs. For the first 8 years of my life, I would go into an ice cream store and order frog ice cream, because mint chocolate chip ice cream was green and had black specks in it. And when Kermit is at the fair, he would order fly ice cream, and it was green with black specks in it. There were supposed to be flies. So I thought that I was getting fly ice cream. I don't even know if I liked mint chocolate chip ice cream, but I grew to like it because it looks like Kermit's ice cream cone. But when the Muppets was coming back to TV, I was so excited because it's just such smart adult humor that a kid could watch and, like, you know, it doesn't matter. And they are very heavy on celebrity cameos. That's like, that's just their thing. That's how it works. But the problem, the first couple of episodes were just, they were not good. They were funny, but it did not feel like it was the Muppets. And so mid-season, and by mid-season I mean in between 12 episodes, they had a showrunner overhaul, and they came back and in 2016 to air the final couple of episodes, and they were all new, completely redone, and they were the funniest half hours of television I've ever seen. I would watch them multiple times, and the comedic humor was so good. The characters felt so well done. There's one episode where they all go out drinking and they come back the next morning, and Beaker and Dr. Honeydew are at the table and they're wearing each other's clothes, and like Kermit's trying to like give a speech, and he's like, wait a minute, what? Why are you two wearing each other's clothes? And Beaker starts to talk, and Professor Honeydew's like, shh, 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 what happens outside of work can stay outside of work. And it was like, it was so funny and so well done. And I was so happy with the way that the show had changed after it went off the air for a while and had its little behind the scenes drama. And again, like Agent Carter and ABC's Greatest Losses this year, it ended on a cliffhanger with Kermit and Piggy on a plane. And you don't know if they got back together or not, because Kermit was dating this other like crappy pig named Denise. No one likes Denise. God, Gonzo and Camilla broke up. It was like Heartache Central in the Muppet universe for me for a while. Like, it was rough times, but it was so good. I was so invested in the characters. There were new Muppets there, and it was so good. They had like the greatest celebrities were on it, and they were very funny.
Because everyone would want to be, like, everyone, like, older than any age, pretty much. Anyone who's ever, you know, lived in pop culture for the past 50 years, if you got the chance to be, oh, you get to meet the Muppets, or you get to be with the Muppets, everyone freaks the fuck out at the opportunity to do that. So, like, I'm not surprised there was a draw, so...
And I love, like, Sesame Street does the same... I mean, they're all, you know, in the same universe. I actually watched, like, the Christmas special... Christmas, it's on YouTube. It's called The Muppet Family Christmas, and it's Sesame Street, Fraggle Rock, and the Muppets all go, like, are at a house together for Christmas. It's amazing. You should all watch it. So I love, love, love Sesame Street parodies, and they've been doing them forever. Like, just because of, like, the way pop culture is right now, every time one happens, they put it on. Like, you know, it's like, and EW writes an article about it, and so, like, it gets a lot of traction, and their YouTube channel is doing really well with, like, parodies.
Do you mean, like, when they do the mannequin challenge and stuff, or, like, what do you mean?
No, like, when they do, like TV shows, so they have, like, Sherlock.
Oh, like, when they'll spoof something.
Have, like,
yes.
Yeah, like, Downton Abbey.
They have so much adult humor. humor. Like, I'm like, who is this for? Like, when they get guest stars on Sesame Street, where I'm like, the 3-year-old does not know who David Diggs is, just saying. Like, so, but the, yeah. Clearly David Diggs is stoked to be on Sesame Street. So it's just this funny draw for, like, you know, a lot of celebrities, adults, to come in and do that. Who's it for? You know, it's not for the children. They wouldn't know.
Yeah, but like, if you're a parent and you're watching, like there's this hilarious video. So I have very young nieces and nephews who are obsessed with Caillou. And there's this video that's like 7 minutes long, and it's like, Caillou is the worst. And it's all these mothers just complaining because that's all they want to watch on repeat, on repeat, on repeat. So if you have something like Sesame Street where the kids, it's educational, and they want to watch it on repeat, you have to entertain the adults too in some way, because there's no way you're going to be able to get out of it. And like, I watched my nieces a few weeks ago for like 7 hours, and if I watched one more episode of Doc McStuffins, I was going to go crazy. Like, it's just, there's nothing layered into the programming that is humorous for adults. Like,
yeah,
I think SpongeBob is one of the greatest shows ever created. I love it. I still watch it. Like, I'll watch new episodes. My brother will text me in like at like 1 o'clock in the morning and be like, if you're up, a new SpongeBob is on, one that I haven't seen before. And like, we've been watching it since I watched it the first episode when it aired after the Kids' Choice.
I remember when it started. Jesus.
Yeah. So it was like, you know, I love the adult humor mixed in with kids shows, and I love watching it with younger, like with my nieces and nephews and stuff, and I'll laugh at stuff and they're like looking at me, and you know.
Yeah,
why is that funny? I mean,
my nieces and nephews, when they were a couple of years younger, the first time they came out to visit us, they don't speak English, or they didn't when they were very young, and the only thing that we could bond about was Avatar the Last Airbender, and we were like drawing pictures of Avatar together and stuff like that, because I like obviously love that show, and so did they, and their parents are like, we love it, we love the attitudes, like, of the that show and stuff like that. But that's still older, that's still like, you know, like 6+,
yeah,
you know, whereas Sesame Street's like 3 and under, and I'm like, I just find it hilarious, like, that they do this kind of stuff when the children are so young. The audience, yeah,
well, there's like this great, there's a great, I just watched this the other day. There's one where it was from like, I think early 2000s or late 90s, where they, or no, it had to be 2000s. They parodied SVU.
Yes.
And they had like the breaks, and it was like the dun dun. But they were like, yeah, but they have all the characters as Muppets. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, so if you watch SVU, it's hilarious, but they're also like, having something happen, so they're like looking for the letter M. Mm. And they're like, I think I've seen that letter before, looks familiar. Mm. I think it's M. Like, you know, they're like, it's so well done. These people are like genius educators. Mm. And I love it. But anyway, the Muppets,
R.I.P. the Muppets. It was
purely adult humor because it was on ABC at like 8 o'clock, and
did
you know, if you
stuff?
Go back and watch, No. But if you go back and watch, like the Muppets from the '70s, it's all adult humor. Like it's not for kids, even though it's puppets.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so good. I love it. Anyway, okay. That's enough complaining. Even though I was like really happy at the end there to talk about the Muppets, I'm just mad it didn't have a place. I think putting it on ABC. My bigger point was putting it on ABC was a problem. I think it should have been on like a Hulu or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like it should have just started there and not been, but you know, ABC, Disney owns the property, so that's where it had to go. That's okay, but we should talk about something positive, and let's start with making Lin-Manuel Miranda cry, because I mean, what's more positive than that?
So this was mine in terms of 2016 hypes in my experience of pop culture. Yes, there are a lot of big things that I really loved. As I already wrote about Vibeable, Captain America Civil War was the greatest cinematic experience of my life. And so that was really thrilling. But even better than that was the fact that I collated an article for Hyperbole, you know, wrote an introduction and a portion, and had our various other staff members on Hyperbole, including Ariana here. And Brittany, I think, did you put one in as well? I can't remember who else. I
know yes, Carl, Brittany did too.
Carl did.
Yeah. And so did I.
Everyone did.
And Kristen.
We're all here. We all made Lynn cry about him leaving Hamilton. And basically it was kind of a letter to him to talk about what the experience of Hamilton had been like. And it was for the day of his final show. And I did not expect this. I expected this to be a really indulgent little fandom article. I did not expect for him to ever see it. It was just, we do a lot of kind of like love letter stuff on Hyperbole that is, it's not really the standard journalism. It's really indulgent stuff. And I like that we get to do it, but it's not something that I feel like it's overtly personal. So I don't feel like it's like the kind of stuff that gets passed around as like, hey, a legitimate article. Yeah, he tweeted this out and was like, they Mr. Holland's opus'd me, and something about, I don't know, I should pull up the tweet or something like that. It was basically, you know, some joke about making him cry or raining on his face or onions or something like that. And the fact that that happened, that he read what we wrote and that, you know, he cared enough about it to say something, even though I'm pretty sure that man cries at the drop of a hat, was really the biggest thing that I could have achieved in 2016, probably in my experience of pop culture, mainly because of the force that he's been putting into the world, not just on stage, but if for the experience of those who follow pop culture as well, which, you know, I'm happy to pass that over to Ariana now to talk, because she was going to tie in with him himself. But I... For 2016, if I was like, 2015 was the year of getting Ewan McGregor to make New Velvet Goldmine canon, is like, yes, that was my biggest event that happened to me this year in terms of my pop culture. 2016, it has to be making Lynn cry about leaving, about our feelings for him when he left Hamilton. So that was a very positive and wonderful and pure experience that I'm still can't quite believe happened. So, yes.
I'm so glad you reminded us of that, because I literally forgot until just now that that was a thing that happened.
Yeah,
2016 was so terrible. It was just this, I just think, like, looking back, I'm like, it was all bad. And whenever I think it's all bad, the only thing I can think of, no, we still have Lynn. Lin-Manuel Miranda exists, and we are alive on the planet at the same time as him. And... how lucky we are to be alive right now. But yeah. Yes, that happened. And that was like the most exciting moment of my life. I mean, I felt just like you, Natalie. I was like, I cannot believe that this man that I admire so much maybe read, maybe skimmed some words that I wrote. So that was super exciting. And I just love everything that he produced. I love the positive energy that he puts out. And I also love the impact that he's making. But he does it, like, in very subtle ways, so you don't even know that you're being influenced by, like, his positivity, which is so wonderful.
Yes.
And I love his tweets, his daily tweets that actually motivate me because I'm a sucker. And I love that he's so proud of being Puerto Rican all the time. He gets so excited, and he's like... yeah, Boricua, and to, like, Lori Hernandez at the Olympics, and just, like, he's so proud, and I love that he's unashamed of it, and I love that Hamilton, I love everything about it, I just love everything about him, and how he cries all the time.
There's so much about him that's just beautiful, and that's everything we need right now, and you know how, like, back in the day, you know, for a while, we're like, oh my god, so-and-so is so woke, they're the coolest person ever, and then, like, 5 years later, it's like, hey, remember when that person who's now a super problematic fave, like, we all thought they were the peak? I feel like that will never happen with Lynn. Lynn will never, like, he will never, I do not think he will ever fuck up to the degree that he will become someone's problematic fave, if you know what I mean. Like, fingers crossed, but he just...
I like that he's aware of even, like, his... even things that are problematic. Like, the Hamilton cast itself is so aware. Like, I adore George Washington with all my heart. He's my favorite president and my favorite, like, human in history. But, and they have so much respect for him too. But then also, like, in the documentary, they were talking about how it's really hard reconciling everything he did for this country with also, like, the man owned slaves. Like, he literally owned human beings. And so I appreciate that Lynn is able to put perspective on things and even call out his own problems.
Mm. And just, he's just so good in so many ways. And I don't even know how to begin saying it. And we've said it so many times in so many ways. But he, you know, from what you said, every aspect, if you think of every problem in the world, he is very subtly normalizing how to make it right. And I just, like, he is the best role model that I've seen in pop culture in my entire life. Like, hands down. But, like, the way that he acts about fans is, like, he, like, super normalizing, like, fan culture and actually being excited as a creator to share things with fans on their level, but also knowing how to, like, keep his shit private. And, like, the fact that he cries all the time, he, like, you know, his emotions and his, the way that he talks about all sorts of things that make him emotional, like, he is not trapped by the toxic masculinity prison. And, like, you know, obviously all of his work with race and class and gender and all of those things, it goes without saying, in the work that he's producing, but just the way he lives his life is just, I feel like it does really subtly just kind of raise the bar for people. And I think that's kind of what I wrote in my little bit. I wrote something like, oh, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I wrote something like, that his work may be raising the bar, but he's gleefully challenging others to jump over it with him. And I feel like that's like his genius and his positivity, it doesn't like feel like far away. It doesn't feel like, oh my God, he's unattainable. He feels like that, like I think that he believes in me, guys. Like, I think that he believes in everyone's capability and that he's just the literal interpretation of inspiration because it makes people feel like it's easy to be better, you know, not because of him, but like that it doesn't seem like it's like this highbrow elite thing to be that much more quote unquote woke. Or that much, like, you know, getting that much out of life. You know, like, it's just, I don't know, I can't, there's no way to put it into proper words. His tweet itself read, "The folks at Hyperbole, Mr. Holland's opused me pretty good, and someone's cutting onions near my face, I think." So that was his tweet about our article. And I don't know, does anyone else have anything else to say about Lynn? Like, he was a pretty good part of 2015 too, but 2016, just with every accolade that came to him, like, it still never, like, makes
him... He's still so humble. Like, he comes across as a humble person, and I just think that's so remarkable.
I don't know, man. It's just... Sigh.
I have to know, if you could make one person cry in 2017, who would it be? Oh, like, if you got the chance to make someone cry like you did, Lynn.
Joe Biden.
Oh,
yes. The dream.
Yes.
I feel like, yes. Joe Biden.
I think that's really easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like Joe Biden also cries like at the drop of a hat.
Getting near Joe Biden in order to tell him anything would be
trouble.
I can't talk about him. It's too much.
I don't know. Well, maybe... I don't know, I can't...
Don't worry, I feel everyone will be crying in 2017, so yeah. I'm sure we'll get it.
I don't think probably, we have to worry. Yeah. Me personally, at the moment, maybe, if genuine answer to that question, Kristen, is probably Misha Collins, because his live streams of what he was doing during the election, before the election failed, he was guerrilla campaigning, like, across swing states. I think it was, I can't remember which one, maybe Iowa, I don't know. Ohio, one of the swing states, I can't remember. I think it was Ohio. Literally just road tripped off his own back, not as part of a campaign, like, and just basically was like, hey, everyone, come here, come here, come here. And talking to them about voting, you know, obviously not voting for Trump, like talking about the fears and stuff. And just the way that he was talking in those videos, because he had a friend with him who was live streaming it, he was, like, broken. Like, and after the election, he was freaking, like, I mean, I know everyone was, but he was, like, grief-stricken crying in public, like, and just, because he's a very, very socially active man. He used to intern at the White House during the Clinton administration, and he was so crushed by this, as are many, many, many people, but, and he's obviously a privileged white man, so his effect is not going to be as dramatic as how it literally fucks up other people's real lives, but what he tried to do with his position and his grief about the circumstance that the country is now in, like, just hurt me so badly. And, of course, you know, many other people have much bigger problems, but he tried so hard with the platform he had, and it was so... His response... There are literally other people in the Supernatural cast being like, has anyone heard from Misha? Is he okay? Like, did he go and... Like, yeah. And, yeah. So he's obviously not the one in most trouble, but if you're asking who I would like to make cry in 2017 with my expression of my appreciation of them, it would probably be him, Kristen.
Very cool.
what else have we got that's good this year? Well, last year. Yeah, 2016.
We have a lot of good family movies. Kristen has seen all of them. I've seen one of them.
I've seen one of those.
I've seen one.
Moana. I've seen all of these. I was going to say, I've seen all of these, plus one or two that I forgot I didn't put on the list. But yeah, this year was a really good year for family films, and not just, like, family films that everybody can go to and they're really enjoyable, but, like, a lot of them had a point of view and, like, had something to say and did so very eloquently and well. So just to kind of give you a list... Zootopia, Pete's Dragon, The BFG, Moana, Kubo and the Two Strings, Finding Dory, The Secret Life of Pets, even.
Yeah.
They were all just really fun, and they did a really good job of creating a movie that an adult can go see that doesn't suck and that the adult can find enjoyment in and still, you know, appeal to kids. I have a, let's see, she's going to be... an 8-year-old niece, who, you know, loves to go to the movies. She loves to go to movies with my mom and myself, and we've taken her to see Moana, Zootopia, Finding Dory. You know, we've taken her to see a bunch of them, and it's just really good fun to have a whole slate of movies that gave us the opportunity to spend time with her and to do really fun things and make the day really special and spend a whole day with the three of us. Like, that just... This year was a really good year for that, and I really am grateful.
And it seems like that a lot of these films, like when you said it has a point of view, you know, it seems like by that you mean, like, that creators are kind of... You know, helping to normalize from a young age, you know, positive or progressive ideas in, you know, stuff that kids like, oh, that happens in the movie, so that must be how life works. Like, really positive ideas about what we want, you know, children to learn, I guess.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, Zootopia, yeah. Especially. They used animals to do it, but made a very strong point about race and class and, like, you know, looking at it and just saying, like, just because you think this is quote unquote, you know, in their DNA doesn't mean anything. Like, you guys are insane. And it really just, it was able to open eyes, I think. And the fact that it won the Golden Globe last week was really, I think, a bit of a shocker for some people, especially with Finding Dory not even being nominated, which just kind of goes to show how great the family movies were this year, the animated movies. It just, yeah, Moana was a big one, too. I know there are some issues that people have, but mainly what I've seen is a lot of appreciation for Disney trying really hard to do it right. Like, they could have done it wrong. They've done it wrong a million times with other princesses and other things. And they really tried this time to get it right and to tell a story that isn't just another princess story. And, yeah, Pete's Dragon, if anybody has ever seen the original, is an incredibly racist...
Really?
I watched it as a child, and I liked the songs and the animated dragon. I didn't know all of what I was watching. And I,
yeah,
like, I look back on it now and I see, like, the racism and the classism and the, they made this poor family, like, hillbilly family, like, the villains and made them look awful. And it's, they really went out of their way to make it kind of a terrible movie. But the remake is a total reinvention and it's a really beautiful story. So, yeah, I just, I like family films. I like all movies, but family films stuck out this year.
Oh, that's, they all sound really fantastic. Moana I really loved, obviously, because of the Lynn factor. And yeah. I started crying immediately in hearing his voice in We Know the Way. Like, I was just like I just started crying in the cinema. But,
So, Karen. Yeah. Karen made a noise. She was like,
Yeah, I'm really glad that this is happening for children, you know, in general. I've heard really great things about Kubo and the Two Strings. I haven't seen it. It's good. Hopefully this will continue and do you know if there are any coming out that are going to continue this trend? I know that Pam wrote about Coco, the Pixar Day of the Dead film. Like, does anyone know anything about that one in the most anticipated of 2017 list?
I don't know very much about it. But, oh, sorry, do you know more, Kristen?
No, I was just going to say I've heard of it, but that's literally where the line is drawn. Like, I don't know anything about it.
I do know, though, that they are trying to get, like, with Moana, they tried to get, like, a lot of Polynesian input. Like, they tried to get people who were actually educated and stuff. And the same thing with, what's it called, Coco?
I believe so, yeah.
Sorry. It's about, I believe it's about the Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, yeah. And I think they've been trying to get a lot of, like, actual, like, people from Mexico who understand it. They're trying to do it right, basically. Mm. So hopefully they do.
Yeah. Speaking of Moana, do we think that it's going to win the Best Original Song at the Oscar, or do you think fucking La La Land? Not that I am against La La Land, but do you think
I have yet to see La La Land, because I can't decide if it will just make me angry.
So. I've seen it. I like it. I like what it's trying to do. But that song is so anemic and just blah. Like,
it works for the movie.
And it's a pretty melody. But any song in Moana kills it, in my opinion.
I didn't think... Well, Moana didn't win at the Golden Globes, did it? La La Land did.
No.
I didn't think that La La Land...
That's because Hollywood is so fucking obsessed with itself. That's why La La Land is going to win.
La La Land was going to be, like, an award bait movie. Like, I thought it was just going to be a really light, like, nice...
They're not even real dancers movie. Or singers.
Like, I thought it was just going to be a little light... like a pretty kind of movie. I didn't think it was going to be award contender.
When Hollywood does things like this, it's basically the same thing as The Artist. Like, La La Land is hearkening back to the old Hollywood musical, and they do it well. Like, they really do. Back when they were doing old Hollywood musicals, like, the leads weren't necessarily singers. They were actors who could sing, who could hold the tune.
They were dancers. They were traditionally dancers.
Frank Sinatra's who could, you know, belt out whatever, but they weren't always singers. And so putting these two in the leads was, you know, they were trying to give a bit of that while surrounding them with, you can tell, trained, wonderful dancers and singers. And just, it's when Hollywood does something like this and they hearken back on themselves, they can't help but, like, get excited and want to throw awards at it. The Golden Globes, I will say, is not usually a good precursor. Like, they don't foretell the Academy Awards very well. Mm. In the history, and especially because La La Land was in the comedy musical category, they were going to sweep because it's a drama in that category, because it's a musical. So it's not, I won't say that it's set in stone. I think there's a lot of wiggle room right now. We won't see the Academy Award noms for another week and a half, but I think La La Land will win a couple, but I don't think it's going to sweep like it did at the Golden Globes.
Well, the song, like Lynn's EGOT has to happen because otherwise Ariana won't have a favorite movie of the year.
Well, but I do want to say something really quick. So, La La Land right now is, sorry, I know we're so far.
We're not even 2 hours yet. It's fine.
So, I know La La Land is right now is favored to win. That might change.
For best picture? Right now it's favored to song?
For best picture. Mm-hmm. It's favored to win for best picture. Similar to like it, the artists, because Hollywood really loves itself and also really loves the good old days when everything was perfect and things like that. Mm-hmm. But the thing with the dancers that I've heard a lot of criticism is that the dance, I haven't seen it, so I can't say, but maybe you can attest to this, Kristen. I've heard that people don't like the dancing because it's not, like, in the old days, they did actually have real dancers. Like, Gene Kelly was a real dancer and things like that. And when they brought in people who weren't real dancers, like, or who weren't professional dancers, like Debbie Reynolds, like, she practiced until her feet bled for 3 months. And from what I've heard, that this is, that they don't quite hold up.
Emma Stone. I'm not any sort of dancer. Like, I can't say. For me, Ryan and Emma did a fantastic job. It's not easy. I've done musical theater and tried to learn dances, and I'm abysmal. So anyone who has, like, the bravery to try that and to put it on film and put it out there, like, I thought they did a fine job with it. There's a lot of dancing that doesn't involve them in this movie. And, like, those dancers, I thought, did a fantastic job. And the opening number for the whole thing takes place on a highway. And it's Emma and Ryan aren't even involved. And you can tell that these people are all, you know, a lot of them are trained, you know, really impressive dancers. So, as you know, from my untrained eye, it seemed fine. But I can see where someone who is a trained dancer would see all the flaws.
Hmm. Yeah, it didn't feel their like one dance. Well, they have two, I guess, but it just felt very like, okay, I'm thinking about the next step. You know, like they were trying. It felt like they were overacting to compensate for the fact that they're trying not to. I'm going to act this way because I'm like, you know, waiting to fall into the, it wasn't naturally graceful. Like, you know, when you're watching
Sutton
clips
Foster
from old movies, like, yeah, no, not even Sutton. Like the movie that this is trying to be is something that's straight out of like a Fred and Ginger film. And, you know, you just watch them and they're like gliding on air. Mm. You hear every single step that these two are taking. Like it didn't flow as well. There is one scene in the Griffith Observatory where it did flow. I felt that scene was like really good and really smooth, but it just wasn't, there was something missing, and the movie was great. I really actually enjoyed it a lot, but I felt like there was something that they couldn't capture the lightning in the bottle. Like, they tried, and they were really close, but it wasn't there.
Well, Oscar nominations are very soon. Variety has just put out a thing like this a few minutes ago, just saying, the Oscar nominations announcements will be slightly different this year, and my friend Jess has retweeted it saying, will they include people of color? Because I believe Donya in the last portion talked about, you know, some of the racial issues in Hollywood this year as her gripe, you know, the whitewashed out situation, hashtag Oscars so white, etc. So let's hope that we don't have a repeat of that, but let's also hope that we have Lin for best original song in a movie, and that he be able to do that.
I mean, the Oscars will have its own problems this year, or different ones, I'm sure. Like, when Casey Affleck wins, even though he's like a total abuser.
Why can't people just not be terrible? Why? Like, why? And why is it so hard for people to just blacklist things that are terrible? I don't know. Anyway, that's a whole nother.
They do if you're black. Nate Parker. Nate Parker got blacklisted. Not Casey Affleck. Anyway, this is the hypes, right?
Yes. So we're going to do Britney's.
Britney, what's your hype? What's your height?
Yeah, so, you know, easy segue right into Harry Potter. So I went to London in 2016 to see the Cursed Child play, and I had turned off, like, all any possible thing that could say any sort of combination of words relating to Harry Potter. I turned off because I saw the play after members of Hypeable had seen it, and I was seeing it like 4 days after the book, like the paper, like the script was released. Yeah. So I was like in a total blackout. I didn't want to know any detail. I didn't want even to know an opinion of what people felt, if they liked it, if they didn't like it, if they were angry, if they were happy, if they were meh. I wanted zero. And luckily I had a transatlantic flight to get me through. Like, it was like, I really hunkered down and didn't pay attention. So I really, really enjoyed just getting genuinely excited about going back into the Potter universe. And as I've talked with Natalie about, like, you know, to death, Jamie Parker was a huge, 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 huge part of that, because his Harry just killed me and is still killing me because it was brilliant. And I was just so happy to be happy about something without picking it apart and just living in that moment. So for like 3 straight days, I went to the play one night, and then I spent the whole day at the Harry Potter studio tour the next day. And then I went to see the conclusion of the play the following evening. And it was just so nice to be immersed in like something that makes you so happy without anyone, like, you know, without outside opinions or reading everything about it or getting really actively involved in like it or discussing it.
Preparing for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of tried, you know, writing for Hypeable makes things a little bit difficult at times. But everyone at Hypeable was like, oh, I love Gilmore Girls. It's the best thing ever. I want to write about it all the time. But when there was actually news for an entire year, not a single person wanted to do anything. So I was the de facto Gilmore Girls writer this, like, year, just picking up news and stuff. And I didn't want to be. Mainly because I wanted
that. There was a whole, like, podcast going on about it.
Aww. Oh, there was. Yeah. No,
they just don't write the articles. Yeah, we've talked about this before, that you're like, you didn't want to be that guy, but you wanted it done right, so you were like...
Yeah, so, done, or done at all. Yeah. You know, it wasn't happening. So I did it, but it was one of those, like, fan experiences, again, where when I went into it, like, when Gilmore Girls was actually, like, it was happening, and it was about to, like, you know, it came out at 3 a.m. for me, midnight for the West Coast, and I got up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I watched the series finale, and then I went right in and I watched it straight through the night and into the morning, and wrote my review, and then went out for a nice long day of drinking with my family immediately after that on Black Friday. Mm. But it was just, you know, it was so great to do that, because what I did was I took it in my own time. I had everything off. The only person I talked to during the actual viewing was Natalie. One, because she was the only person who was awake, and two, because you didn't care, and I could just give you the magical musical number timestamp to go and watch because it was I needed someone else to like prove to me that it wasn't just the fact that it was 4 a.m. or like, you know,
this was
7
really whatever happening.
Time it was, like, that it was something that was actually happening and I wasn't delirious. But besides that, it was just like those two experiences of just shutting everything off and enjoying something and taking away what I wanted to take away from it before letting the little nitpicky voices in was just something I learned in 2016 as a fan that I want to do in 2017. If there's something that I am so excited about, I'm turning everything off and I'm going into it and I'm not listening to anyone. I mean, that is kind of how I watch The Americans. I don't want everyone's instant reaction. I don't care what everyone else is thinking. I watch the episode I have everything off. I don't read anything that night. And then the next morning I read my like four favorite reviewers who are like, and I listen to the Slate podcast about it, but that's all I do. Like I really found that I love being able to find those moments of just finding something that you know you love and not having to have an immediately negative or controversial opinion about it, but just like digesting something, I guess.
See,
so that was like a hype for me in 2016, just being able to do that.
I agree with you. I think that my experience this year of watching Supernatural was similar. In that it is a show that has run for so long and that, you know, has had so many, you know, people obsess, you know, go through phases of obsessing over it, it doing something they didn't like, you know, getting burnt out. So there's huge, huge, huge opinions about Supernatural, you know, a decade worth of opinions. Whereas my experience of the first 11 seasons before the new season started airing was so private. It involved, like, private conversations with a couple of, like, people who are privately fans. But it didn't involve, like, oh, this is what everyone thinks about this episode. Or this is what, like, this is, you should look out for that. That's bad. Or, you know, that's good. Or whatever. It was, like, really private. And now that I am writing features about the show, as the new episodes come out, it's kind of a very difficult balance for me to follow the news, and a lot of the news comes from a lot of, like, the bigger fans, if you know what I mean, like, to keep an eye on big fan accounts while also still keeping that private, like, oh, this is, you know, 7 pages of meta about that episode has already gone up, if you know what I mean, and if I'm, especially if I'm writing about it, both for my own feelings and to keep the work original, to sort of block that out is something that, like, for a hot second I was like, oh, look, new season, everyone's talking, and now I'm kind of like, I think that I don't want to talk to you people, at least not until I'm finished writing whatever I want to write that week or something like that. So,
oh yeah, no, I totally get that. Yeah. Especially like right now, like, thank God I know people love Sherlock and I love it to death, but I'm so glad it doesn't come out so often.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I fall down Sherlock rabbit holes so quickly and it's so hard for me to get out. Like I never remember how much I really, it has its problems and it sucks. Like the first episode of this season was god awful, but like for some, there are just things that happen and I am gone for hours and hours and I am down a rabbit hole. And this year I'm writing about Sherlock. So I've like, taken to, you know, waiting for it to happen in the UK and then like getting it before it hits the US and then watching it and then writing it so that I don't fall, like I don't,
yeah,
like, you know, start reading and picking things apart ahead of time. Yeah. Like, are there, Kristen, do you cover any shows that like, you know, you want to watch in isolation and like, or and Adiana, like they're just shows that you watch that like you just feel like you can't write about because it's just like you don't want to ruin it.
Yes, Jane the Virgin, but it's already ruined for me. So,
I'm trying to think. Like, it seems like every show that's kind of been that way for me, I've ended up writing about in one way or another.
Yeah, I didn't want to write about Supernatural, Kristen. I was not going to do it. But,
well,
yeah.
When I first started watching The 100, I didn't really want to write about it because I loved it so much. And I quickly, like, realized that Selena was the only one writing about it, and she kind of needed, like, someone else to help because she had a lot going on at the time or something. And so I jumped in, and now I don't really regret that, but that show is really hard to watch because, like, I love the show. I watch it in a vacuum. Like, I don't pay any attention to Twitter while I'm watching The 100 because I know the divide that's going on in the fandom. Like, I know what's going on, and I know that I'm going to get people from both sides on my Twitter feed screaming about it. So I watch the show in a vacuum, and then I go and write about it later. So, but there have been shows in the past. I just can't think of anything right now that's, like, jumping out at me.
Well, perhaps we should all practice this more where we can in 2017. I agree about Cursed Child. We're going to be talking more about that later on the show. So we're going to do another episode where we talk about the new Potter canon and all of that with, you know, those of us who've seen it and those of us who read it, you know, talk about both Fantastic Beasts and Cursed Child. But I was quite heavily spoiled for Cursed Child, the content, because of I saw it like 6 months after it came out. But I was very much sort of closing off my mind to making any judgments about how I felt about what they were going to portray until I saw the stage show, and I did, you know, have a pretty positive experience there, as we'll talk about later as well. But I'm so glad that Brittany got away with what she did for both Potter and Gilmore Girls, because she was freaking out about both of them for a very long time in terms of no one's allowed to talk about this at all ever until she's handled her business. So I'm really glad that it actually went the way you wanted it to.
Oh, yeah. And it just kind of occurred to me, Brittany, this isn't really fandom-related, but I probably should watch Lions Games in a vacuum. Because
I'm going to watch the Patriots game with friends tomorrow night, and I don't think they're ready. I don't know if they're, like, some of them are, two of them are Patriots fans, and they have been through college with me, and we have watched the games together, which is we're the reason that we're getting together, but there are a lot of new people coming and we're just like a little bit concerned.
Yeah. Like that's a fandom, and I say that, I use that term loosely, that is like love hate, and it's so awful. I really should just never be on Twitter during games, but I am, and it's, yeah. In the future maybe I'll adopt that.
One little tidbit I wanted to tell you, Brittany, while we're here, if we're talking about your awkward transition between La La Land and Cursed Child, could have, just so you know, there is a link throwing back there, in that our good friend Jamie Parker, the real Harry Potter, one of the shows, as you know, I am, we'll talk about this more on our Cursed Child episode, and Potter episode, crushed at every live performance of his that I miss, basically, because he's my favourite stage actor in the world, and one of them that I was most crushed about is that he was in the Old Vic production of High Society, which is my favourite Golden Age of Hollywood movie. So that was Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly and Frank Sinatra, and he played the Frank Sinatra role on stage in a musical version at the Old Vic Theatre in London in 2015, before Cursed Child was in the picture, and I am crushed to have missed that, but just a small shame that I was not sure if you were aware of or not that was a thing that he has done as well.
I was not aware. I feel like I've know more about him since talking to you about him.
We'll talk about that more later. Anyway, that was also a fantastic hype for me this year. Getting to see him do that was a huge thing for me this year. So, again, we will actually delve into the Potter of 2016 in another episode. Did you figure out a two truths and a lie about your 2016, Brittany? I'm excited for this.
Yeah, I did. Okay, so since I'm hosting, I have two truths and a lie for 2016, and, here it goes. So, in 2016, I went to Mexico, and I attended a Bachelor in Paradise filming segment without knowing what it was. I learned how Buffy's entire last season plays out and have kept my cool about it on Rewatchable. And I listened to Bette Midler talk about Broadway from Creeping in a Hallway.
Oh, so, my God. I want to say that Buffy is a lie, but if it's not...
I do too.
I need to go and talk to you immediately after we get off this call if that's not a lie. I want to say that Buffy is a lie, because I really hope it's not true. Kristen, any thoughts?
My first instinct was that it was the Buffy one that was a lie, because I want it to be a lie. I don't want you to know everything, because I know nothing.
I kind of don't want it to be a lie, but I just feel like you wouldn't put it out there in such a public way if you were a fraud.
Wow. Way to sugarcoat that.
All right. Well, in January of 2016, I crouched in a production office's hallway because Bette Midler was in there for a meeting, and I listened to her for a half hour.
What the hell?
Talking about Broadway.
That's awesome.
No one was like, excuse me, why is that girl like, crouching in the hallway?
Well, because it wasn't my meeting or our company's meeting, and I just sort of like crab crawled my way back into the kitchen.
But it was in your building. It was in that shared building.
Yeah,
was
in that shared office.
Oh my god.
Then when I was in Mexico on vacation with my friends from college, there was this like weird filming thing when film crews were there all week, and we're like, what is happening at our like resort area that we were staying at? And the guy was like, well, do you want to go in? And we were like, yeah, okay, whatever. And it was like a Bachelor in Paradise. Like, apparently all, like, this huge segment of Bachelor in Paradise was filming that week, like, at our resort.
Do you know which couple it was? Oh, because I was very invested in Bachelor in Paradise.
I tell you.
What did they do? Because then I would probably know.
It was the one where they were like on like there was like a stage. It was like a stage, and there was water next on either side of it. It was like the host was there. I don't even know what they
did. They do like a jalapeno kissing contest.
Oh, maybe. Hold on.
Oh my god.
I can find out. I really want to find out for you, because if you are invested in it,
she's like on season 16, episode 7 of Bachelor in Paradise. Oh my god.
Filming on location. Here we go. I'm gonna find it.
One of their things was that they did like the world's longest jalapeno pepper kiss.
That was definitely it.
That was it?
Yeah.
You know they're getting married, Brittany, so witnessed some real love right there.
Their first date. That was it. Yeah. No, they are getting married, because I remember I followed one of them on Instagram for a little while because I was like stalking the photos of when they were in our resort. And then I was like, okay, I'm over this. So I unfollowed. Because she's like a fitness like freak. She has like for some reason, she's like 100 partnerships with like weird protein shakes. And I'm like, I'm not into this. But anyway, I am not spoiled for Buffy, rewatchable fans, but I am spoiled for one episode in the final season, and really? It kind of ruined a lot of stuff, because I looked up where a GIF was from, and because I really needed to know. And
now I want to know. Please text me on Facebook. Talk to you about this.
If we're airing like Buffy truths, yeah, there are a few things that are spoiled for me too. I went to a Joss Whedon question and answer panel at Comic-Con about 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. And so I know a few things about what happens in, I think one of them is Angel and the other is Buffy, but you know, it's stuff you can't avoid when the show's been on forever.
Tell me privately what you know. I need to know what you know.
Yeah, so I watched that clip, and it was great. It was very validating and made me happy. But yeah, it kind of ruined a couple of things. But that's okay. It's no big deal. But I'm not completely spoiled or anything at all. So good job, guys. You can see right through me. Also, you've all been podcasting with me for 3 years.
I like how Ariana was like, I don't think you'd put it out there if you were if you would openly admit that you were a fraud. So, yeah.
We also just know that your life is fantastic enough that you could run into Bette Midler and be on a random set. We know that this could happen to you.
I'm paradise on vacation filming.
I vaguely knew you went to Mexico, and I just really wanted the Bette Midler thing to be true. So, yeah. It's so great.
question?
Ariana has contributed one on the NATW Podcast Hub Twitter, which I will read to you now if you'd like, as a question of the day, because apparently no one wants to give me another question about 2016. I have a random question for the group, though, as well. So I'll read you Ariana's, and then I want to ask you guys one. So she said, who is your favourite Ariana? And it's a poll. Ariana Grande, Ariana Dumbledore, or Ariana the original, presumably herself over there.
That's a great question. I'm going to go with Ariana the original because we're the same person. So it's also like a vote for me.
I mean, is there a choice? It has to be Ariana the original.
Yeah, I think so. Though sometimes in my head, I kind of picture you a little bit like Ariana Grande, like with the, like the kind of, like...
like licking donuts?
No, just... I think it's mainly the eyelashes and the fact that she has, like, also has a voice that kind of sounds like she wants to kill you. Like, so... And you also kind of have that. Like, a very sweet voice that's about to turn into murder. And so... I have no particular feelings about her, but sometimes I kind of mash you together in my head because she also has that kind of sugary murder going on. So, yeah.
Sugary murder.
I would take that as a compliment.
It is a compliment. Very... She's an odd girl, but she also might kill someone in the same way that you might. My question for you is, I just saw a random tweet talking about series of unfortunate events being quality television. I'm sure it is. I'm very excited to watch it. However, at what point do we stop calling digital content television? Like, just putting this out there to the group. Like, shows, Netflix or whatever, is it TV? What constitutes as TV? When is that phrasing going to stop, like, or change, do you think? If you know what I
mean. Yeah, but I think I don't have any opposition to calling it TV because I watch just as much TV, like Jane the Virgin and all that stuff, on my computer as I do Netflix content. And I watch as much Netflix content now that I finally got rid of my television from 1988 and got a smart TV. Mm. I watch as much Netflix content on my physical TV as I do. Like, I think it's like, when are movies going to stop being called movies? Because I stopped going to see them in a movie theater. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, think it, like, transcends, like, the term TV or television?
I think so.
The device. It means short-form shows or whatever, like you know, serialized storytelling.
Yeah, because, I just finished, last weekend when I got snowed in, I watched, all of, like, one day at a time, and that felt very much like a TV show. Like, I wouldn't know how to classify that as something else. It's like, because it's like a sitcom, but it's on Netflix, so, you know, it's not I don't know if I would just have to say, like, oh, it's a Netflix show, because then I feel like that's dividing it from anything I'm watching on CBS, you know, like, it doesn't need that divide, because it could easily be on, so it's longer for sure. But I could see it being on a network and not on Netflix. So I feel like that draws a line between, like, you know, oh, this is a Netflix show, this is a TV show. Because, like, I feel like also, like, the Marvel universe on Netflix could probably work on FX. Mm. Like, I feel like they're in the same vein as, like, what Legion is going to be and, like, what The Magicians is doing on Sci-Fi, but they're just on a different platform.
Yeah.
Plus, Beyond, like, this new show on Freeform, they premiered their premiere, and they are airing on TV, but the whole series is available on streaming. So, like, they're doing a weird hybrid where, like, the first episode aired on TV, but you could have gone on your computer that night and watched the whole series if you wanted to. But they're also continuing to air every episode on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So, like, that's, like, really blurring that line.
Yeah. I'm just curious if, you know, in 10, 15, however many years, if that terminology, like, you know, oh, that's really good TV, or, like, a TV show will change to just, you know, more saying, like, series or show or whatever, if the TV terminology will just come to encompass, or whether it'll be dropped, if you know what I mean. That's just random.
Yeah.
thinking.
No, no, I think that's, well, I mean, like, cinema has changed, like, to movies. Like, you know, it's not, like, no one really says that anymore. Mm. Or, like, also, even in theater, like, no one's going, no one really says, like, I'm going to the theater, like, I'm going to see a play, I'm going to see a musical. It's sort of, there's that divide, and that has come a long way. So yeah, I feel like in 10 years for sure there could be something completely different that everyone is just like, yeah, that sounds good.
Anyway, yeah, anyone else got a question they want to ask the group, seeing as Ariana and I both did?
How tired am I going to be tomorrow on Rewatchable, guys? How tired?
That's pretty much my question too.
I'm sorry. Yeah, because when you guys booked, when we booked this episode and then the Rewatchable, I didn't really process that you guys, like, had to go to sleep in between, because I didn't. You know, I don't. Like, it's afternoon and then it's going to be evening and then we're going to start. Though I'm going to be recording.
It's, like, it's almost, like, 2 a.m. and then we got to get up and be ready to go at 8. But also we have to watch, each of us have to watch 2 hours of content.
You guys shouldn't have agreed to this episode then. Oh, we should finish.
In all fairness, I agreed to this before we knew that I had to get up at like,
yeah,
8
I did too.
So
sorry. It's going to be, we're going to be starting that episode at my bedtime as well. So I'm going to be like, like, and trying to focus. So hopefully it'll be thrilling and exciting content that keeps me excited and awake.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if any of you have a question you want us to answer, like, what is Rewatchable, or why are you all so sleep-deprived, you can send us an ask on notaboutheweatherpodcast.com or reach out to us on Twitter at NATWpodcast or talk to us on Facebook. And if you enjoy these podcasts and like hearing us talk about random things that we hate and love, you can rate us on iTunes and give us 5 stars. So, you know, iTunes knows that we exist and that we're cool and we're not spoiled on Buffy when we shouldn't be. So, you know, everything's awesome in our little universe. And even though Natalie sort of like hosted the actual episode, I'm happy to introduce and conclude it. So I'll look forward to doing that again.
I'm sorry. I've got to dial it back. I've got to learn to not facilitate and just let myself be facilitated. I'm bad at it. I facilitate all day every day in most of the things that I do. So it's quite difficult. So perhaps we can.
I'm happy to come on here and introduce any episode you want me to, just so you can hear my hosting voice.
I want you to do everything. I want you to. I love you. I love podcasting with all of you, and I'm excited. I know Ariana has not done hosting before, so perhaps we'll coax her into that, and she can develop her own way of controlling the Motley crowd.
She can, and she will. She'll dominate us
one day.
It'll be great.
I feel like her time to shine must come. So, is that it? Are we done?
Yeah, that's it. We're done. Do we have a sign-off for this or no?
Not really. Like, we just bye. Say bye, I think, and then the music
plays. Oh, that makes me sad.
Would you like to make a sign-off?
We should get a sign-off.
Okay. Do you want to make one up right now?
No, this is a lot of pressure.
Like a musical outro or something, like a poem that we read. Do you want to write us a poem that we read at the end of each episode or something, like a lullaby?
Oh, like a haiku?
I don't know, something, yeah. A different haiku each week that, like, says something.
I could do that.
Yeah, that says
something. Oh, yeah, like, no, I like that. We should do that.
Yeah, so.
Well, starting next week,
we'll have a haiku. We'll have, yeah, an exit haiku. Oh, God. All right.
That's the best idea ever.
Okay. Okay, everybody, say bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.